You're listening to episode 36 of the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie and my special guest this week, Deputy Chief Darren Wallentine.
Welcome to the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie. My special guest today is Deputy Chief Darren Wallentine of the Tucson Fire Department. Welcome to the show, Darren.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. And besides being Deputy Chief, I mean, I would like for you to talk a little bit because I know you've spent, I think, pretty much your whole career at the Tucson Fire Department. But also, perhaps, if you would, mention a little bit about you have a busy month coming up here. I believe the board election has already started, right? For the IAFC, the Safety, Health, and Survival section. Chief Wallentine is running for a board seat on that. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that, what interests you about that and so forth. And let me turn it over to you. Tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, thanks again for having me today.
Absolutely.
It is a busy month. But yeah, I started my fire service career way back in 1992. So I was a paid call firefighter out at Orange County Fire in California, where I got my start. And so it resulted in an opportunity to come out to Tucson to be a full-time career firefighter. And so I began that journey back in 1996. And so with that, it's been, yes, most of my professional life has been in the fire service. So, and it's been probably the most rewarding opportunity that I've had to not only serve the community, but also to provide opportunities for my family that would not have otherwise been available.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Well, I'll tell you one thing, Chief. I'm going to have to make sure my son listens to this one because he is a paid on call firefighter at the moment. He's sits in a couple weeks for his EMT test and get through that so that he could move up a little bit. And then I think he's jumping into Fire 2 school in the summer here.
Excellent. That's excellent. I tell you, it's a great opportunity to get your feet wet, to get the opportunity to get the experience. So paid on call is quite a unique pathway where, you know, I know that we're going to talk about it more in depth later, but it's that always being on call is makes it a challenge for that work-life balance, because when the tones go off the pager, at least back when we were having pagers, when that would buzz in the middle of the night, it was a matter of you go. And so it was a 24/7 adventure.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Well, tell us a little bit more about your as a chief, you are getting in, you've been involved, of course, from the national perspective on education and training and all of that. You are talk a little bit about the board election that you're seeking.
Yeah. So the International Association of Fire Chiefs, the Safety, Health, and Survival section are seeking board members. And so the election began April 18th, and it will run through May 17th. And so members of that section will have an opportunity to select from, I believe, 9 candidates who would like to fulfill that seat. So what I'm encouraged by is that there is such a wealth of knowledge and experience in the group of individuals who are there, and that really of any of them, they would be excellent candidates to be on that that board. So that's a tremendous opportunity to work on policies and protocols and standards that, you know, safety is the most important aspect of what we do, not only on the fire ground, but also with cancer in the fire service, mental health, and ultimately, a successful career for our folks so that they can not only get to their retirement, but they can enjoy many years after their retirement and enjoying that pension that they've earned over a 25, 30 year career.
Absolutely. And, one of the things I talk about, and you probably know where I'm going with this, Chief, is that, we can reach that retirement. We can have a long retirement. We can have a lot of money, but if we don't have anyone to share that with.
Absolutely.
I was mentioning, Chief, is that, where I was going with that is that the retirement, you can have a long retirement. We can get plenty of money in retirement. But one of the keys that I always try to get firefighters as well as law enforcement and all first responders to focus on is that, you want those special people in your life, your loved ones, to be right there with you and to Absolutely. Enjoy not just retirement, but sort of enjoy the journey of your career. I mean, what do you think about that? Should we all try to enjoy the journey of our careers as well as retirement?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's one of those things. I think as, for example, when your son is looking to get into the fire service as a career, I know when I was early in my career, it's, when you're in your 20s and maybe into your 30s, you're not really thinking about the long term. You're not thinking about, by the time that you get to retirement, what that's going to look like. I know that it is a challenge for public safety professionals, whether it's in fire service, law enforcement, even in the military. It is a challenge for the spouses, for the significant others. And if you've spent a lifetime pouring into a career that ends up sucking away from those relationships, what was the point?
Yeah.
So I've been blessed to have been married now to my best friend and the love of my life now for 27 years. And we're now at a point where the kids have all gone off to do their own thing and live their lives. And now we're in a, what we would call an empty nest and kind of like that rediscovering, our marriage and relationship. That's, I wouldn't want, it any other way,
Yeah. How many children?
So right now we've got three kids, not planning to have any more. But we did get the great news that we're going to be grandparents in October. So our oldest son, he's in the Air Force, and his significant other, she's also in the Air Force, and they found out that they're going to be expecting. And so we got to go out to Valdosta, Georgia this past weekend for the gender reveal. And so it's going to be a granddaughter. And so we're very excited for the fall.
Wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks and then, both of them for serving the country as well.
Yes. Yes. We are very proud and honored to have them serving. Our middle is our daughter. She's in fact, today she's at MEPS in Oklahoma City.
Oh, yeah.
She's looking to make a career of the Army. She's going into a warrant officer, hopefully in this summer or fall. So she's looking for what's next after a college career and playing college soccer and coaching as a graduate assistant for this last year.
Oh yeah.
So she needs to find that that career that can help pay off some of those student loans now that they're coming due. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And then our youngest is a sophomore at Liberty University in Virginia, and she's studying vocal performance. So she got all the talent in the family. So she sings opera and classical and also musical theater. And so we're very proud of her and the work that she's doing through her second year of college. And so who knows, maybe we'll need to, find a place to go watch her on Broadway someday.
That'd be awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, where did she get those vocals from? Is that you or your wife?
Neither myself nor my wife. So it was just, it was one of those miracles that happened. So we weren't planning to have three kids, but, she was our blessing from God that he surprised us with. And so he gave her talents that neither my wife nor myself have. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Hey, let me ask you, Chief, on, you know, of course this is the Get Balance podcast. So I talk about work-life balance and one of the things I always like to mention too, is just refresh listeners' memories, is that when I talk about balance, what I'm talking about is, and where my research has been, is that the greater we care for ourselves, you know, the greater we take care of our physical needs, our mental needs, social, and also spiritual needs, the more effective we are in our careers, as well as in our home life and personal relationships. So I want to get your thoughts on that. That's the research I've been doing for several years now. Does that seem like it makes that it's logical? The more we care for our, better we care for ourselves, the more effective we are in other areas of our life.
So coming from a deputy chief for the safety and wellness division for Tucson Fire Department, you're speaking my language. It is absolutely the physical, the mental, the social, and the spiritual that we are focused on to provide the resources, to provide the support, because not everybody in the fire service or even in law enforcement have the support because of, you know, the challenges that come with a career like this one. Yeah. Knowing that divorce is very prominent. And not a lot of spouses know that going into it, where your spouse is at a fire station for sometimes 24, 48 hours at a time. You know, if you happen to be a spouse of a firefighter who works, you know, like in California, they could be on these wildland fires for weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a spouse in the military, where you're a single parent while your spouse is deployed. Yeah. So it is a challenge where, you know, there's things, and having listened to even your last podcast about personal responsibility, you know, there's a lot of things that we in our department, in our administration, can provide as resources, but then there's an opportunity for our people to take that personal responsibility to not only take care of their physical fitness, eat well, you know, and recognize that there's challenging calls from time to time that they might have to reach out to a professional, mm-hmm. you know, and then the whole focus too on fire service is that we look at this as a career, but it's also a family. So the social aspects of a fire service career is that you will, you know, work with people for a period of time and you may be lifelong friends with them. And that's the mindset that most of us have in the fire service, is that this is more of a family than it is a career.
Yeah.
And I think the part about the spiritual side, it's often a very difficult conversation or a topic to bring up around the kitchen table at the fire station. But it's one, I think that it's an opportunity for all of us to understand that, you know, we are seeking fulfillment in what we do. And when we have the spiritual part of that fulfilled, whether it's, you know, you're involved in a church, you're involved, you know, in whatever that fills up that cup, mm-hmm. you know, it provides the opportunities for you to be more well-rounded and put others before yourself, you know, in that sense. So,
yeah. No, very well said. Absolutely. Now, let me touch on the mental health piece. And then I want to ask you a question. But on that mental health, we follow each other on social media and things like that. And we hear a lot about, you know, smashing the stigma of mental health and, you know, from the suicides, whether it's in the fire, department, firefighting industry, whether it is in law enforcement. And something that I just learned the other day on the airplane by reading Make America Healthy Again by Dr. Sapphire. I read her book on the airplane. I had no idea how many physicians commit suicide each year. I had no idea. I mean, it was 400 to 500 a year. And I can only imagine that number increased with COVID. That's something you don't, I don't know. For me, maybe my head's been in the sand other places, but I just never heard that. You know, and it comes down to that, you know, part of it is that mental health, which of course is associated with that, is that we hear a lot about smashing the stigma and things like that. But it's like, I want to ask you, you as a leader, as a deputy chief, how do you help do that? Because when we think about, no one questions, should we get a nice full annual physical, right? Preventive checkup.
Yeah.
Why don't we do that in mental health, you know, as a culture? You know, just go get a tune-up. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes and yes. The mental health, again, going back to the, there are some conversations around the kitchen table at the fire station that we can talk about. You know, we can talk about our annual physicals. We can talk about, you know, what we're going to, you know, to eat for the day, you know, who's going shopping and so mental health in the fire service, it's still being worked out. There are departments that are very progressive in their approach to mental health. And then there are departments that check boxes to say, we've got an app for that. Here's a list of resources, but then there's no follow through. The things that we are challenged with oftentimes is that we do have an excellent benefits package, you know, being a firefighter. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes that benefits package does not have resources for mental health through your insurance provider or through the EAP that might be associated with your municipality, your district, or your department. So for the Tucson Fire Department, we have been very fortunate to have partners at the University of Arizona. Just because I became a battalion chief or then I later became a deputy chief doesn't make me the smartest person in the room, and that there are resources out there that we rely upon to help us make good decisions that are based in research, that are based in, you know, good practices. So we have a licensed clinical psychologist that is within the contract for our occupational medicine contract. Mm-hmm. Where we utilize this resource to help us develop policies, develop our peer operational support team, give us training on topics that are going to help. You know, we currently have an opportunity to teach suicide prevention right now. And during our second quarter CE, it's online, but it's a conversation now that I'm expecting is happening around the fire station, that we now have conversations about, you know, asking questions, you know, persuading somebody to get assistance and then making the referral leap for somebody who might be in a difficult spot.
Yeah.
I think that, and here's where I'm going to go off on a part of our issue, is isolation breeds that disparity, and that when there's despair, you don't know how to pull yourself out of that. And with isolation comes, you know, those suicidal thoughts potentially. And I'm just going back to the days when I first started in the fire service, there were open dorms. We all slept in a bunk room. Our beds were, you know, all together. You know, we all go to bed at the same time, lights are out. But in today's fire station, there's private dorms. There's a large flat panel TV. You have cell phones. And for one thing, you're not getting good sleep because you're, you know, focused on watching TV, you're staying up late, whatever that might be. But ultimately, after a difficult call that we respond to and then get back to the station, there's the tendency that our folks will go back to their rooms and isolate themselves. Hmm. You're not necessarily, unless you have a very intentional company officer who has the conversations like, that call really sucked, you know, and here are some things that I'm struggling with. Oftentimes we could have firefighters who go to a call, go to their room, isolate themselves, and then it's that separation that we don't want to happen. We would rather be, you know, stronger when we're connected and have conversations about it. So
plus if isolation seems like it sort of becomes natural for probably the younger firefighters, because
yeah,
you know, as teens, you know, go back, you know, whatever, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, whenever they, you know, when they were teens, you know, especially with the phones, and like you say, mm-hmm. you know, they're all used to that now.
Yeah. So, and the other part of it too, is that sort of go back to your private dorm, you know, that's modeled for those junior firefighters, you know, that becomes the norm. And what really is kind of one of the things that keeps the deputy chief up at night is we might have somebody who is struggling at home with a work-life balance, challenges with a marriage that could be, you know, jeopardized, and they're not willing to talk about it. And they are fed that opportunity to be isolated in their dorm room rather than being amongst their coworkers, which could provide that social support to those firefighters.
Right. You bring a very interesting perspective on it, one that I have not heard yet on the show. Because when we, you know, when you think of the fire station, you think of the family.
Yeah.
But as in like our families today, I have two teenagers, Hannah's a junior and Gabrielle is a senior in high school. You know, it's either we eat dinner together as often as we can, but after that, it's pretty much in the bedrooms doing homework, you know, isolation.
Yep. You know,
sort of a tendency. Yeah. Well, let me take you back in your career, if you would, Chief. Is that, was health and wellness always a part of who you were? Did you, do you exercise regularly? Have you always, watch what you eat? Now for the listeners, you know, full disclosure, I can only see the chief from the top of his shoulders up. he may weigh 400 pounds for all I know. I don't know, but, you know, I just want to say, has that been a part of your life?
Well, so the short answer is yes. I've always been active, growing up. You know, I was always involved in sports, you know, playing baseball, wrestled in high school. And then obviously with a career in the fire service, that sort of a mindset, you know, has been with me throughout my career. So fitness is important, although there are, you know, peaks and valleys where you're not quite as, you know, either motivated or you don't quite have the time, you know, because you're learning a position, you know, a new promotion comes your way. But yes, it's something that is important to me, you know, to model, you know, as the safety and wellness deputy chief, is that it is, again, just like what you're focused on, that broad approach to a healthy career, you know, mind, body, and soul. And so, yes, working out is important to me, and I'm actually on the peak on this one. So I've been, since the first of the year, doing a better job of watching what I eat, staying hydrated. That's a big one for us down here in Tucson. Yeah. And to send out reminders on the importance of hydration and really making sure that our folks understand what it means to be hydrated, because you can't be just chugging some water, you know, either after a fire or on your way to a call, hydration is a lifestyle. And if you're not fully hydrated the day before you go to work, you may be in some difficult spots. Mm-hmm. If you are at a fire scene and it's 115 degrees outside, and you know, there are challenges.
Oh yeah. And I know what you mean by the heat out there. I spent a year and a half, I lived in Cave Creek, Arizona, up outside of Phoenix there. And I remember one day coming out of the building from working, and it was 125 degrees.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
It was one of those July, you know, days. But I always enjoyed, I like to run outside. I always felt the hotter, the better, you know. Mm-hmm. But the weird thing is anyone that's in the desert, they understand when you sweat it, it dries so quickly. You don't necessarily even recognize you're sweating a lot of times, yeah. But yeah, I love the heat. And then after running for several months, I developed this cough that never went away, you know, and then after about a month of it, I finally went to a doctor. First thing he asked me, he goes, "Do you run outside?" And I go, "Yes, I do." He goes, "Well, you know, this is the valley and all the smog and everything here." He goes, "You might want to just stop that and see if that cough goes away."
That's, yeah.
Sure enough.
I know that Tucson is not quite the epicenter that Phoenix is or Cave Creek is. Maybe the air is just a little bit better down here in Tucson, but
yes.
But anyway,
I think so. Yeah.
So I do want to say though, when you said what is it about the health and safety or the safety and wellness position and what's really motivated me, mm-hmm. that 4 years into my fire service career. So in 1996, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. And so my cancer diagnosis and my experience with that, I think really molded or shaped me to where I am today. So where I had the opportunity to achieve a promotion to battalion chief, and then later, you know, toss my hat into the ring for the position of our deputy chief for safety and wellness. It's that I've experienced this, yeah. to the point now where I'm now cancer free. And that's been 25 years. And it's meaningful to me having my experience to then give back and do whatever I can for our men and women at the Tucson Fire Department to work hard on the cancer studies that we get to participate in, you know, nationally.
Yeah.
So with that being at the very beginning of my career, it's one of those things that I'm well aware of, and knowing the latency period for some of the cancers that we could encounter as firefighters, I know that we are at heightened risk at the end of our career and then stepping into our retirement and not being able to live, you know, with the, you know, with those that we've spent our whole career with, and yeah. now enjoying, you know, our retirement. You don't want to be enjoying your retirement having to deal with chemo and radiation and appointments with oncologists.
Yeah. Well, thank God that you are cancer free. And I understand that the driver, yeah, behind that with health and wellness. Yeah. Hey, Chief, let me shift over, ask you a question. I don't think I've really asked this question on the podcast before, but you mentioned about an empty nester. If I were to ask your wife to say, "Do you feel like Darren prioritizes you?" What would her answer be, and how do you do it?
Well, I want to make sure that I'm not gonna, you know. Let me put it this way: if you were to ask her today, I am, if not 100% sure, I'm 99.9% sure that she is going to say that I prioritize her.
Yep.
There have been times in my career, mostly early in my career, where I was busy on 24-hour shifts. I was on busy trucks, which meant we had oftentimes nights where there was no sleep. Mm-hmm. And so having chosen to become a firefighter, it's that impact on that, on your spouse, on those that you are living with.
Yeah.
It was a very kind of heartbreaking experience to hear from my kids when they were older, that when I was coming home from shift and I was needing to go to bed because I'd been up all night long, mm-hmm. that my attitude, that my temper, that my just kind of not being able to cope with the sleep issues really poured out on my family. It was difficult on my marriage. It was difficult on my kids. And so it has not always been fantastic. But it's this marathon sort of an experience in a fire service career or in a law enforcement career, that if you can weather the storm early on, you know, by prioritizing, you know, your family, you know, your faith, and, you know, you can hopefully get to that point where you're now looking at your spouse, enjoying the time now, you know, when the kids are gone, and kind of redeveloping that love that you had when you first started.
Oh yeah.
So I would say if she asked her today, I'm pretty confident she's going to be providing a good response. Ask her 20 years ago, maybe not.
Well, how about for the young firefighters today, Chief? The sleep, as we know, I mean, we learn more and more about the sleep. We understand the importance of sleep. We understand how lack of sleep, being deprived of sleep, we understand how it contributes to weight gain, how it certain types of cancers. I mean, it plays a big role. Not to say it plays a bigger role today than it did yesterday. It's just that we're identifying those mm-hmm. roles more. Is there an answer out there? Is there a best practice out there for this sleep? And let me share with you something. I was in California a couple years ago doing my workshop, and for out there for a week. So I hit all shifts and, you know, so I had to be out there for the week to hit every shift. And when we got to the sleep part, some of the stations, there were, you know, a lot of runs, just exactly what you talked about. And they just don't get to sleep. And these guys, though, they were on 48-hour shifts. So they really didn't get to sleep sometimes, right? And I said, well, why don't you take a nap? Yeah. Take a nap during the afternoon. If you know, sleep when you can. How about that? You know, what do I know? Sleep when you can. And they said, yeah, we'd love to. Go talk to the chief and tell him that. Because they walk in here, catch us sleeping in the lounge chair, they're going to get on us to go out and do more fire inspections. That was their answer. So they would not allow them to sleep. And I'm like, it just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, what are some of the best practices for leadership in stations when it comes to, you know, yeah, we need to find a way for recovery, right? Sleep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I almost cringe every time I hear about the 48-96, that particular shift schedule, when that was beginning, starting to see that get some momentum. I understand why some departments choose to go with that shift, but it's my experience in the conversations that I've had with firefighters that I know who've been working that shift schedule, that it's rarely a pure 48-96.
Yeah.
There is overtime, there is forced overtime, there's constant staffing where you might find yourself working a 96 before you get a 48-hour break. So yes, I think the emphasis on our chief officers not allowing for naps when you know that you've got busy stations, I don't understand that thinking. I'm the deputy chief of the Tucson Fire Department, and if I'm coming by the station sometime around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm expecting that the captains and the battalion chiefs are allowing the crews to get some downtime, get in what we call a safety nap, you know, just to get a little bit, you know, so that it may help in the long run. The whole thing about sleep in the fire service, there isn't a silver bullet.
Right.
I don't believe that there is a singular shift schedule that meets the needs for any department. I believe the 24-hour shift schedule continues to be the big elephant in the room that nobody really wants to approach or discuss. And I know that the 24-hour shift schedule, it's horrible for sleep, because for every 24 hours of disrupted sleep, you need 48 hours to recover. So the point being is that we have shift schedules where we have disrupted sleep patterns, but then are you able to sleep well when you're at home? Because you can't turn your brain off. You always think that the tones are going to go off, the lights are going to pop on, and you're going to need to get up and go. And so it's that hypervigilance that most of our firefighters experience, that even though you're at home and you're sleeping, you're not sleeping well. That's because you are, for a third of your life in the fire service, you are aware that you are not going to get good sleep.
Yeah. Very well said. And also those 48-hour shifts with the guys, where I was working at that week, they said, well, don't forget about our 3-hour drive into the station and our 3-hour drive home. I'm like, why 3 hours? Did you check home prices around the station?
Well, and I know, and again, like I said, first, I said, I know why some departments have this particular shift schedule.
Yeah.
Because there are some departments, specifically West Coast departments, that utilize the 4896 because it is too expensive for the firefighters and their income to afford living in an area that they're serving. So yeah, they drive 3 hours to get to work and then 3 hours to get back home. And so it makes more sense, at least on paper, for that 48-hour shift schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it's on paper, it means it's correct.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, let me ask you, we're coming up on about 40 minutes. We still have a little bit of time here, but what role has faith? Let me ask the question a little bit differently. If I were to ask you what your guiding principles in life are, what would you say those are and where did they come from?
So as far as my faith goes, it is something that has been a part of my life from a very early age. So my faith in God is important. It's the most important thing that I have. Besides God, it's, you know, that's what sustains me. So growing up with a faith in God and being involved in church, it has helped to focus not only the priorities, whether it's in my career, family, whatever it might be, is that I'm putting God first, and then I'm putting, you know, others next. So when I put others ahead of myself, that is an opportunity for me to live out, you know, what my guiding principles are, which is a faith in Christ. So I'm putting Him first. And so when I put others first, I'm in essence fulfilling that part of my faith. And so that has really, I believe, been when I said before that the difficult times early in my fire service career, the rocky parts, the difficulty, you know, in marriage and family, that had been the, in essence, the major foundation that we all, you know, lived on, which sustained us, that helped us get through the difficult times to get to the point where, you know, we can, you know, have an opportunity to love others well, but it, you can't really love others well unless you, you know, love God first. And that's my belief. That's my faith.
No, very, very nice. And help paint a picture, if you will, Chief, is that those rocky, you know, they and I always say, you know, work-life balance, it ebbs and flows, and it can ebb and flow daily. You know, it just, it all depends. You know, next week's a very busy week for me. I'll be out at your place on Monday. Mm-hmm. And I'll be over at Yuma Police Department for the rest of the week, doing 6 workshops over there down on the border. And we'll have border agents, ICE agents, Yuma PD, a couple reservation law enforcement officers, sort of big. And I think, and the fire department, Yuma Fire Department as well. Okay. But I'm missing a few things back here. Both my daughters run track. My Gabrielle is a senior, and it's senior night for track. So you walk out, you know, on the football field during the track meet and things like that. But it ebbs and flows. But, you know, she texted me. She goes, "Are you going to be in Arizona?" I said, "Yes." And, you know, I said, "I'm so sorry." She goes, "Ah, it's all right." She goes, "We'll just have Hannah FaceTime, and you can watch and you can be there with us too. You know, my wife will be there and stuff." So it ebbs and flows. You know, we can't be in two places at the same time, but sometimes with technology, you know, I can see what's going on and be there with her a little bit. And I wanted to ask, during those rocky times that you mentioned, how did you get through them? How did you get past them? Because what I really want you to talk to is about the, imagine someone's listening right now and they are going through those rocky times and they're in their 20s or 30s or something like that. What advice do you have for them?
So I would say that I think having the conversation early on, you know, for those who are entering the fire service, if you're married, you know, it's having those conversations on what the expectations are, that there, when it's, when there's unmet expectations is when the communication breakdown occurs. So if you are dating or if you're not yet in a relationship, honestly, a marriage is a partnership.
Yeah.
Throughout the fire service, because we all know everybody's business. We are together not only when we're working, but families are coming to the fire stations on holidays. So with that, I look at the fire service career, or even just a career in public safety, as a blessing and a curse. It's the two sides of a coin. On one side, it's a tremendous opportunity, but on the other side, it could be very challenging, difficult. And so my encouragement for anybody who is entering into this line of work is you need to communicate. You need to talk about what it is this path is going to be like moving forward. And honestly, I had no clue when I entered the fire service what the path was going to be like. All I know is that if my wife and I are together, we're partners, we're best friends. I put her first, she puts me first. Everything else comes secondary. Then we have at least a shot at being successful as we migrate this journey of being a firefighter. So there's times when I'm up and she's down. It's times when, you know, vice versa, But ultimately, we are each other's support. And I just have to hand it to her. You know, when I was on busy medic trucks and being up all night long, that she had, you know, enough love in her heart to allow me to come home and go right to bed.
Yes.
And then take care of the kids like she had on the day previous, which she was by herself.
Yeah.
So it's the opportunity, I think as a fire service leader, looking for ways to maybe have a open dialogue with spouses. We've included some spouses on some of our committees that to get a different perspective. I mean, we can talk to firefighters all day long, but it's a different message when we invite a spouse in to talk about their experience and how a fire service career affects them when these firefighters come home tired, drained, and sometimes you don't want to talk about the calls that you go on.
Yeah. No, I think that's great advice. And it's something that also I'm looking to do is start having couples on the show, on the podcast. I think it'd make for a great conversation and lend to a different perspective.
And it will be lively. It'll be a lively conversation, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah. I may have to play referee. Yeah. The other thing I'll share this with you is that I just got approved yesterday from it's not on the fire side. I'll ask you offline about continuing educational credits on the fire side and the health and wellness, because it's something that maybe I'd like to pursue for my workshop. But for the listeners, this podcast will be released on April 26th, the morning Eastern time. And when this is released, I will be actually conducting a work-life balance workshop at Chief Valentine's place at Tucson Fire Department. And he already told me he is going to be there. Mm-hmm. And so I really look forward to that. And also, I wanted to share with you, because when you mentioned about the spouses and that communication, I recently developed a second workshop, but I haven't released it yet. I just starting to get the word out just a little bit, though. It's essentially, and it'll mean more to you, Chief, after you've gone through the first workshop, but essentially what it is, it's a work family workshop. It's for couples. Mm-hmm. Is to, for the firefighters and law enforcement, bring their spouse, significant other in, and we're going to work on this family balance together and put together a plan, just like what you say. Mm-hmm. Put her first, put him first, and let's go together at it. So I'll share more with you when I'm down there on Monday.
I'm excited to hear about that.
And is there, coming up on the time here, is there anything, Chief, that I did not ask you or that you would like to spend more time on?
So there's, as the safety and wellness deputy chief, there's various, areas that I oversee for the Tucson Fire Department. It's not only the cardiovascular health of our firefighters and through that relationship we have with an occupational medicine provider, but those annual physicals are critical. So for the fire service folks who are listening in, that is an important part of a balanced life, is to make sure that you have that resource. Even more so important along those lines is to make sure that you utilize your benefits to establish a primary care physician relationship. Yeah. We've had instances within our department where somebody is diagnosed with a disease, whether it's cancer or something else, and they've only relied on their occupational medicine annual physicals, where if they have not been seeing a primary care physician, there's going to be delays in referrals to specialists. So it is a critical part that you keep your primary care physician, you know, and see them, you know, opposite in the year of when your annual physical occurs, because there's only so much that they can do specifically about cancer screenings.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I just had my referral to a dermatologist for my cancer screening for skin cancer and melanoma, because that's a family risk. And so there's some personal responsibility that our folks have to make sure that they get their colonoscopies, they get their skin cancer screenings, because there's things that won't be, you know, conducted through an annual physical.
Yeah. No, very good advice.
So the one other thing too is the efforts that we in the Tucson Fire Department are, you know, we have a tremendous opportunity to lead the nation, is our partnership with the Firefighter Cancer Cohort Study. This all was born out of a FEMA grant that we were awarded through the University of Arizona, so that we partnered with the University of Arizona College of Public Health, where we followed firefighters for a 3-year period to prove exposure to cancer-causing toxins.
Wow.
And so through that 3-year process, we established some of those best practices, you know, post-fire washdown.
Yeah.
We put our engineers who are at the pump panel, not in their turnouts necessarily, but we put them, you know, in an air pack, because respiratory, you know, inhalation is a prime cause of exposure. So we have our engineers putting an air pack on while they're flowing water to the firefighters who are interior. And then lastly, is to make sure that nothing that's dirty or contaminated is going back into the cab of the truck when we go back to the station. We want their gear to be clean. We want the badge of courage to be a clean set of gear, not a dirty set of gear. Dirty set of gear shows that you still have contaminants on you, and you're still potentially exposing yourself through absorption through the skin or breathing in things that that are still there. So the opportunity to partner with the University of Arizona and now the University of Miami, and then departments from around the country like Boston Fire, Palm Beach County, Orange County Fire in California, and LA County, is this emphasis to follow firefighters for a 30-year period, so that we can do a better job of finding the prevention efforts to, you know, to give our firefighters a personal responsibility in minimizing their exposure and to be smart about their risk when they become a firefighter. That's a very eye-opening experience for brand new recruits when you start talking about what the risks are, because that wasn't a topic that was brought up when I first started my fire service career in 1992.
Yeah. Oh, and I appreciate all the work all of you are doing, as well as so many people do. And it, one thing that I've learned working with firefighters is what I don't think most people really understand: how complex it is, how sophisticated the research, the study. I mean, there are so many different dynamics that are going on, and you know, of course, being fit, ready, fit for duty, and just ready to go at it at a moment's notice while taking care of all the long-term risks and everything that goes on. So, you guys do, ladies and guys, do a wonderful job at it.
Thank you.
And one of the ways that, of course, I like to close out my podcast, since you're a listener. The other thing I'd like to thank you for is thank you for having me coming down with sponsored by, and a huge shout out, thank you to the 100 Club of Arizona. They are a fantastic organization that serves all first responders in Arizona. And if you have not looked those up, if you're listening, please check out the 100 Club of Arizona. But I'd like to thank you for having me down there this coming Monday. And also to close out this, I always like to it's just an offer. No one's obligated to do it, but if you'd like to close out this podcast with a blessing for first responders, I'll turn it over to you, Chief.
All right. Well, Donnie, thank you for your passion. Thank you for your desire to serve those who are serving. It is a long marathon career that that you want to get to the finish line. You want to get there successfully. And the only way to be successful is to be balanced. Lord, do we just thank you for God in our lives so that we can turn around and serve others. We thank you for that opportunity, and I pray safety and blessings over all of our fire service personnel. Amen.
Amen. Thank you very much, Chief.
All right. Thank you, Donnie. I look forward to seeing you on Monday.
Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.